the time. The first I'll talk about an evaluation of Q-hat, as you just heard about, defined by Krishna and collaborators, by that light-like Wilson loop, just in N equals 4 Yang mills. And I'm going to spend a little time on this just because we find a leading contribution which is different from the one that Krishna reported, so there might be some controversy about it. And then after that, I'd like to talk about some ongoing work that I'm doing with various people at Cincinnati. So just to go through this quickly, this is the setup of the light-like Wilson loop. The only difference here is that I've used T for the time instead of using the light cone parameter, and not to confuse it with the temperature, I'll always write the temperature as the inverse temperature bake. Other than that, this is the basic proposal. We're supposed to take the limit in which these become light-like, and holding this separation fixed and small compared to the inverse temperature. We'll also need to subtract quark self energies, which will become an issue at some point. So here's the typical ADS-CFD slide. I use exactly the same notation as Salam used. So I think I can just skip through it. The main point is, of course, that the Wilson loop will be the boundary of a string world sheet. And I'm going to put in a seven brain on which the strings will end on, and the height of the seven brain will become the mass, if you like, of our probe quarks. So in pictures, this is what it looks like. Let me get this arrow out of the way. So here at this radial direction is the radial direction of ADS, and then the planar directions are on Minkowski space-time. At R0 is the black hole horizon, and at R7 is where our strings will end. And the Wilson line are these, what I'm calling world lines here. So now the problem simply is, given this set of boundary conditions for the string, solve for the string, that's given by just solving the equations of motion falling from the Nambu-Goto action. And we're going to look for solutions with space-like world sheets, and so, as described by Krishna, and then e to the I, the Nambu-Goto action evaluated on those world sheets, will give the semi-classical saddle point approximation contributions to the Wilson loop that we want. Okay. So here's how I set up the problem. I'm just going to choose a certain world sheet embedding. This is, in other words, some sort of gauge choices to fit the loop parameterization of the string world sheet. So tau and sigma are my string world sheet parameters. Since it's a static process, or stationary, I can just choose static gauge. The embedding time is the same as tau. Here it says that they're moving with velocity v in the x direction, and I'm set that the parameter along the string equal to their separation of the quarks in what I'm calling the y direction. So this is a gauge choice here. It could break down if the string doesn't move monotonically along the y direction, if it sort of loops out or something like that. We would see that as places where the derivative of r, which is the profile of the string as it hangs down into the ABS, if the derivative of r with respect to sigma became infinite anywhere, that would just be telling us that this gauge choice is breaking down. So, and then we need some boundary conditions. This tells us with this that we're holding the two quarks a distance L apart, and that they end on the seventh ring. Then you find an equation of motion, which is actually integrated once. So there's the first integral here, which is, at least if this had been a time-like world sheet, you would just call the force required to hold the quarks the distance L apart. And now it's just a matter of integration. And one thing to point out is that I chose the sign of this integration constant in here so that the world so that the world sheet is space-like. It turns out if you in this setup the signature of the world sheet only depended on the sign of this integration. I chose it in the right way. The world sheet. One thing to note that might seem counterintuitive is that the world sheet can be space-like even if the quarks are moving with velocity less than the speed of light. The reason is that the speed, if the world sheet is space-like, it means that these boundaries of the world sheet have to be space-like. But this line is not necessarily a time-like line for v less than 1 because it's down in some depth in the ADS geometry. So just going back here, we see, of course, that this does not have Lorentz invariance. If I'm at any fixed value of r, there is some, you can think of that it gives a rescaling of what the local speed of light is. So I have to look for solutions, it turns out, in two different regimes, either with when the speed of light is less than 1, but with space-like world sheets, or speed of light is greater than 1. And now it turns out that they have a simple behavior, that the string solutions when the speed of light is less than 1 can have turning points either above the D7 brain, where they end, or below. The turning points below are always at the black hole horizon. So the solid line here is just the position of the black hole horizon, and the dotted line is supposed to be the D7 brain. And because there's these two sets of turning points, there's now an infinite number of solutions where the string sort of wiggles back and forth between the two turning points as many times as you like, keeping the distance between the endpoints fixed at L. So I'm just given some, this is actual, you know, integration of the equations for some pretty input values. On the, when the velocity is greater than 1, then the turning points are both below the D7 brain, and then there's only two solutions that will, with both ends that end on the 7 brain. And that's one that turns at some sort of intermediate depth, and one that goes all the way down to the black hole horizon. As you can probably guess just by looking at them visually, the ones with the least action are simply the ones which are the shortest. So you're supposed to, of course, measure their length in the ADS black hole metric. But these red ones here and here turn out to be leading, that is to say, shorter than the next leading contributions, which are these green ones, which come down and touch the horizon once. Okay? The fact that there are two solutions here, both up, is sort of just happened just because I took for this plot a low value of the ratio of the 7 brain to the black hole horizon radius. If I set this up here, that only one of these guys survives as you go.
So the string actually goes above 57.
That's right.
Okay. In what sense are they leading?
I didn't mean to say leading, sorry. I just meant to say shorter. Okay. Smaller action, if you like. Since these are stationary, the action is the time for which they're going times the length of these strings. That's actually odd times the
length. Two very unique question. In this geometry, there is a gravitational force which is pulling everything down. So why doesn't it pull these strings down?
Well, these are not Lorentzian strings. I mean, they're not time-like strings. These are space-like solutions.
We're moving in an upside down chemistry.
I'm not sure about
it. Make it very easy.
Right. No, no.
Strings don't satisfy Neumann boundary conditions.
No, the boundary conditions are that I'm holding their endpoints at a fixed separation, and so I have to apply a force on either side on the two ends here, and I adjust that force to keep the separation here. You could redo this analysis by holding that force fixed and letting the separation change, but in the end we want to compute the Wilson loop for which we keep the.
Are the forces different for different?
The forces are different for different solutions. I need more force and more wiggles and that.
So what's the difference between this, the second solution and this first and this third?
Are you talking this is the third?
And this one, yeah.
Well,
the second and the third.
Yes. This has this requires slightly less force than this one, and at least or large enough values of z, this one ish turns out to be a shorter proper length than that. Okay? This is just a matter of integrating this differential equation with those boundary conditions. Okay? And we just do it numerically.
And so, as you change your velocity, then eventually it becomes flatter, 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 and then it goes over to this one that's bending down as you go above this degraded one.
Oh, yeah. So if I try to go through v equals 1 in this thing, then, yeah, these guys. Yeah.
So I think Chris asked this question. So what are the boundary conditions? You have a different boundary condition.
I hold the ends of distance L apart, and of course they end on the seven brace.
The question is what you will do with multiple solutions.
Can I just ask why you're even talking about a seven brain in the sense that in the definition of the Wilson loop, you have an E3 brain, which is the boundary of space time, there is no above. In the original definition of the Wilson loop, there's nothing above the E3 brain. The E3 brain sits at the boundary.
Well, so.
You need a D7 brain if you want to talk about mesons, obviously.
Okay.
Whether
I put a probe D3 brain or a probe D7 brain here makes no difference in any of these calculations.
It does matter if there is or isn't a space time above the boundary.
Well,
if I think of the D3 brain as the ultraviolet cutoff field theory, then you're going to a regime which is more ultraviolet than ultraviolet cutoff.
I can put a probe D3 brain in the ADS4 background, in the ADS5 background. And it doesn't stop space-time in the ADS theory.
The question is, what is the prescription for calculating a Wilson loop?
Yes, exactly. That's what we're getting to. And so,
and at least in the original prescription, you put the probe D3 brain at the boundary, not at the middle.
I'm not sure what the boundary is. We want to take the limit as it. We need to regulate this in some way.
Right.
This is a crucial point. I'm going to regulate it by putting a probe D3 brain in the ADS5 background. In this case, I know how to calculate. I can calculate straightforwardly like I'm doing here. And then I will be taking, and this is what this next slide is about, taking the limit as this probe brain, the seven brain or the three brain, goes off to the boundary. I don't know how to do the put it at the boundary first, or what it means to put a probe through the brain and cut off the space-time above the boundary.
All I'm saying is that what I just described is what Malthusiana described as his prescription. We talked about
it. He probably doesn't want to take his slides out of order.
Well, we don't have enough.
Please.
So now we need to take the light-like limit, and we also want to take the probe brain to the boundary. Okay, so we want to end up at this point basically here, at b equals 1 and large z7 is my r7 essentially. So there's actually many ways of taking this limit here, and it's not a priori obvious that all of them will give the same answer. So one question, at least in our minds at the time, was maybe what answer we got was dependent on the order of limits that we took. And so here are various limits. So like the D limit is the idea of you first going to large, first taking the limit of large R7, and then take the limit as V goes to 1. And C would be the opposite limit. This would be on the V. The V greater than one side, and this would be, we have a narrow band on the V less than one side, where you can do the same. So what we found, just by looking at these four limits, is that the answer was independent of the order of limits. We couldn't actually prove this analytically, or at least it seemed too much work to try to do that. We contented ourselves with just looking at evaluating it in these four different limits. In all cases, what we found is that the leading L dependence for the short strings, which are so-called up strings in this little narrow band, or the down string over here on the V greater than one side, went linear with the separation. And the leading L dependence of the next one, which is the solution of Krishna and collaborators, which went down and touched the black hole horizon, went as L squared, and this is the one that gave the values of Q hat that we focused on.
So it's not leading, it should be L to the zero. Is that a constant piece?
Yeah. I'll talk about the constant piece in just a second. Okay? So I'm talking about the L dependent.
All of these are in the shaded region. Is there a limit when you are in the white region you want to respond?
These would be time-like pulse loops on this side.
But you can take a limit of the time-like region as well at this point.
Well,
then
you get this oscillatory behavior of the Wilson, not the...
And you get
even
the IS instead of the other minus S.
So the answer is zero for the real part of IS.
Right.
With no L squared.
So if I just sum those two saddle points, this is the answer I got. And now I put in the constant pieces that I didn't mention before. Okay. So this is independent of how we took the limits. So where do the constant pieces come from? Well, I had to make an infinite self-energy subtraction to get finite answers as I took the R7 to infinity limit. So I chose the subtraction in such a way to get zero on this term. Okay, it's an infinite subtraction, and I have
It's a finite subtraction.
It's
the string. The action of a vertical string hanging down from the RD7 brain to the horizon, hanging vertically, is finite. In your own paper.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's finite.
So, I'm sorry. Yeah. Here we have an infinite string hanging down from the boundary down to the black hole, and that's how we did this subtraction. So the idea is all we're doing is subtracting off some L independent part contribution independent contribution to the action of the strings. I don't know what determines what I should be subtracting here. Okay, this is some ad hoc prescription, just saying let's just throw away the L independent pieces of these actions. I could have chosen to subtract something different that differed from it by plus 1.3, which gets, I would have had a 0 here and a 1.3 leading term in the second one. I think, as has been argued long ago in the literature, that computing Wilson loops in n equals 4 super young mills, you should not have the freedom to make these subtractions. And instead, that the value of the Wilson loop, say, this is discussed in ADS CFT correspondence without a temperature, so no black hole background. There you expected certain Wilk to get some finite answers for Wilson loops. And to And then it was proposed by Drucker, Gross, and Aguri that the appropriate way of calculating Wilson loops in the ADS-CFT correspondence was not to actually do what we were doing here, which was to compute the Nambu-Goto action and then make a subtraction, but to calculate a Legendre transform of the Nambu-Goto action, which was supposed to sort of, well, they argued that that would be, that's the correct sort of finite object to calculate on this on the string theory set. So, so I would say that I think that this calculation should be done, it hasn't been done yet, to calculate using the Drucker-Gross-Aguri prescription if the question of the values of these finite terms it is crucial.
But doesn't this just amount to doing the proper holographic renormalization? So you've in essence thrown away the temperature dependent expectation value of a Polyakov loop, but has no interesting dependence on your parameter.
Exactly, right. So that's what I don't really think, I didn't think that this constant piece was an issue anyway. I thought it was a matter of arbitrary subtraction. I have a feeling that there'll be some argument on that point. The other possibility that Krishna pointed out to me was that there are examples where you can calculate in a saddle point approximation, and you find cases where there are saddle point contributions which simply end up not contributing to the object that you're trying to calculate. So unfortunately, on the strings theory side, I don't really know how to determine whether a saddle point is sort of will contribute or won't contribute, but perhaps Krishna's arguments about the role of the probe range somehow cutting off the space might be relevant. The cutting off would only actually remove that leading solution if you chose to take the light-like limit using approaching it on this side, that is to say, with v less than 1 as you go, not on this side, in which what I'm calling the leading solution hangs down from the probe. So maybe I should just, that's all I wanted to say about this, and maybe I could just pause for comments.
Yeah, also, it first seems like the infinite number of solutions you mentioned earlier that was just an artifact of regularization you chose. And if you directly do, say, if you directly did the net-neck Wilson loop, and then you actually don't have those infinite number of solutions. And you only have one trivial solution and one non-trivial solution, which we both found. Right, so so it seems like the infinite number of solutions are just artifacts of the regularization you chose.
So,
because if you choose a different regularization, if you find those infinite number of solutions you have, which does not exist, and then does that mean that you have, and this is an artifact of your regularization?
So, I'm not quite sure. I regularize the theory by choosing arbitrary V and finite cutoff, and I found
this whole set of solutions, and then
I take my regulators to their appropriate values.
Yes,
this is the only way I know how to do an honest calculation in this theory.
Because
if I'm taking the V going directly to the V equals one limit first, or trying to take directly R7 to infinity at the beginning, I have divergent quantities in my
Everything was finite.
That zero that you subtracted was actually a finite subtraction. There's nothing divergent.
Well, as you agree, they say subtracting all finite. Everything's finite. There's no infinite subtraction.
Yeah, I have a simple physical question, but somehow what's the definition? When that was derived, yes, in gauge theory, you only need balloons, and a small dipole must have overcorrection L squared.
Right.
There couldn't be constant oil.
Exactly.
Right? If we go to...
Except there are vibratory corrections.
Yeah.
Are part of understanding whether this is actually...
Well, if you have quark and anti-quark at the same point, they have zero charge even if they move, but not scalar charge. My question is, if we go to Dynichlor 4 theory, which has lots of other fields, like scalars, also scalars, do we want to include radiation of the scalars at the beginning or not? That's how we compare. As far as I understand, you have so this other terms is a radiation of some scalars, I presume. That when you have L equals zero and quark and anti-quark move together, they still have scalar charge, which somehow radiates, no?
So
presumably radiate some scalars.
Edward, I'd like to comment on this. In terms of dipole model, this result means that you have a dipole which interacts with the cross section, which is linear in the transverse side.
Yeah,
so this linear piece, actually, what you get if you resample logarithms of 1 over x, you cut in PCD, because what you get is you get this L squared for the power of anomalous dimension, and this anomalous dimension is BFL, and BFL is close to 1/2. So you do get, in fact, this dipole which interacts with the cross section, which goes approximately linear in the transverse separation. The constant, I have no idea.
The constant is there because of the subtraction. If you don't subtract, then the constant is
zero.
I
don't argue with calculation. I agree with calculation, presumably. Right. I'm saying in gauge theory, when you want only gluon radiation, that would not happen. If a quark is on the top of the anti-quark, L is zero, there's no charge, nothing gets radiated here, right?
Yeah, it's better actually to think about it in the language of the calculation of a dipole moving through the medium. So, right. I think that the other solutions, by the way, to answer, I think it was Pavel who asked, what about the force of gravity pulling them down? We do agree that if you regularize the theory that the way Phil has done, these upward going solutions do exist. So the force of gravity argument doesn't bite. But they're in field theory language, it's physics above the ultraviolet cutoff of your field theory. So it's regularization artifacts. And whereas what you want to do when you evaluate the Wilson loop, because you want to have the Wilson loop should be telling you about the physics at the scale of t, or it scales proportional to t.
So let me just say, I'm completely agnostic on the issues of...
Do we have radiation of gluons, or do we have radiation of everything?
We have the calculation of a Wilson loop.
Let's scale.
Yes.
Okay, so it is total radiation of everything, yes?
But actually,
now, even if we differentiate over L 2 times and get coefficient, we don't know what part is gluon and what part is K.
If you look at the Larry, if you look at the Molinsky definition of the Wilson loop, you're right that it has the scalar piece in the up in the exponent. But if you now put that loop on the light cone, that scalar piece goes away. So actually, on the light cone, it's only gluon.
How comes the quark and anti-quark on top of each other still do something?
We don't think they do.
Okay. So,
do you want to use your time that way? That's fine.
Yeah. No. So I'd like to move on to talk about a different topic now.
You missed. Well, no. Before that. You mentioned this covariant regularization, but you look across in the group, so yeah. It doesn't give the same result as the subtraction.
Nobody knows. In a black hole background. It's only been done, to my knowledge, in the pure ABS spectroscopy. Yeah. In my remaining few minutes, I just want to raise some puzzles that I have that's motivating some work in progress. And the work is on looking for frictional forces in ABS. That is to say, actual dissipative mechanisms on the string theory side. And the reason for that is, I'll present a reason in terms of a little thought experiment involving the HKQY+G solution, which is the famous drag string solution. So let me just review here, even though it's been mentioned a couple of times. If you look, now we're talking about timeline world sheets, you demand that the endpoint of the string is pulled with whatever force is necessary to keep it going at constant velocity. You look for a stationary solution. First of all, more or less the angle at which the string drags is a measure of the force that's needed for the momentum that's being put into the string. So at zero force, when it's an upright string solution, and for low values of this angular parameter, there are solutions, but they hit this ergo plane at which their light sheets change signature, and so they're presumably unphysical solutions. And if for too great a force, then they turn over and go back up and reconnect. But right in between, there's a beautiful solution which manages not to change signature that has been discussed at least a couple of talks. So let's think about the following thing. Let's say I now look, instead of a single quark, a meson with a heavy quark and a light quark, by putting in two of my boundary brains. And let's look at solutions here. And I want to think about the physical situation in which my boundary conditions are that I'm pulling on the heavy quark. If they're on different brains, they have, say, different charges under different muon gauge groups. And I can apply an electric field along this brain to pull this one along. And I don't want to apply a field here. And then I want to ask, what's the steady state solution here? So by applying no force here, you would think that the correct boundary conditions here are Neumann. So the string should end normal to this brain. And then there's only one solution, which is this upright string segment, which moves without friction. You don't have to apply any force to it to go in. Then you can imagine increasing the velocity, or equivalently, just moving the setum brain past this ergo plane. And then what seems to be the correct solution has to jump to the drag string solution. And still, even with this light setum brain, though now you have to feed in momentum to the heavy quark, it's still a net zero drag solution in the sense that that energy is now deposited on the light quark brain. Okay. So the question is, the question is, what is the nature of this transition? Either it's saying that there's some sort of sharp transition in the velocity when you look at these mesons, and they go from a kind of small configuration, and then at a certain critical velocity jump to this extended configuration, or perhaps it's a matter of the fact that really there was a whole continuum of solutions which were available if we're willing to allow energy to be deposited on the light quark brain. And then you would have to ask, is there some sort of instability, some small effect, which destabilizes these solutions, and as R7 goes down, or as the velocity increases, picks out this solution as the preferred solution. In any case, one way or another, it seems that we have to understand this issue, we have to understand some means of dissipating energy, or in this case, the momentum current, in the ADS space, either as understanding in this picture how what it is that picks out a single solution here, or what is the sort of the dissipation mechanism into modes on the light 7 brain. Yeah. So this motivated us to ask what are some possible sources of frictional forces on the gravity zone. And all of them are small effects. They all come in, are down by n. So one is that in the equilibrium situation, there is, of course, a thermal bath of Hawking radiation above the black hole in this ABS black hole background. And this should be taken into account, and so strings moving in this background will feel have some interaction with this bath of closed string modes, and they'll feel some drag force in that bath. But again, it's small, and also just doing simple estimates, taking into account, you know, even though the string is long and it stretches down, there's still not enough of an enhancement, and you get very small drag forces, it seems, in this way. Another possibility is radiation reaction. As the string moves, maybe it radiates the light to the supergravity modes, the graviton, doliton, and so forth. For the stationary string solutions, though, it seems to be zero. They do have, of course, proper acceleration, but what governs the rate of the radiation is actually the proper time derivative of the acceleration. And so it vanishes for these stationary strings. But again, this could be a mechanism if there's for some reason an onset of instabilities, then the gravitational radiation could be sourced by oscillations and the instabilities. And also, of course, it's also a closed string scattering effect, so it's down by 1 over n. But there are cusps solutions are actually typical in this case. They actually happen, these solutions which go down and hit this ergo plane, they all hit it normally, and you can make good solutions of the equations of motion by just reflecting the string around this cusp point. So they have a cusp at the bottom here, and then they go back up. These are Meson-like solutions with cusps. As has been looked at in the context of cosmic string, gravitational radiation of cosmic strings, you can have a large amplifications of the radiation if you have cusps formed. And lastly, there's also could be macroscopic instabilities in just from looking at time-dependent solutions of the Nambu-Goto equations, which is that even though you're pulling them, you're forcing them with stationary boundary conditions, they might develop non-time translation invariant solutions, like the formation of turbulence. And in fact, there have been arguments by Steve and friends that from the opposite point of view, if you took two long parallel drag string solutions, you expect interactions between them, and perhaps you also expect some sort of formation of a break. Again, these are 1 over n effects, but we could turn this around and ask, on the other hand, these are supposed to describe, be dual to some process of dragging some objects through the quark gluon plasma, and since we have a small viscosity, that means a large Reynolds number, typically, and so maybe you should expect turbulence effects, so maybe we should be looking for these things. If you make a simple estimate of what the Reynolds number should be with 8 over s, 1 over 4 pi, and I don't know, I use like the Debye length for the quarks, you find that you get large Reynolds numbers if you're in the, as soon as you become well distant. Thanks.
example there. You're trying to drag a lighter cork with a force that's above the critical force that destabilizes its E7 branch, right? So shouldn't I just be interpreting that as pair creation of the lighter quarks? And won't I actually see this in a way that your analysis, Steve, basically showed when I looked at fluctuations of the lighter D7 branch?
But actually, well, so here I'm not pulling it with a.
There's not force.
There's no force being applied, and it's sailing along fine.
Right, but over on this other side now you have momentum flowing. That momentum has to go somewhere. But isn't the natural interpretation just to say that you're seeing essentially instability-driven dynamics of the D7 brain? It's all D7 brain dynamics, not anything to do with 1/n effects.
So I guess that's fine if there is a sharp transition between this behavior for this that behavior below. And that could be the way it happens. And then I guess there's an interesting question as to whether there is some observable effect of the fact that there is this sharp change in behavior for mesons.
I have a simple question. In your right plot, it seems like the thing doesn't obeys the boundary condition at the lower E7 brain. Why is that? You have a force only on the upper quark, but not
there. Is no solution.
There's no solution.
There's no solution that ends normally to this so with zero force on the upper brain.
That green solution is not allowed either by the boundary condition. So is that what?
Well, that's the puzzle. It seems to be that you're forced to deposit your momentum into the lower brain.
And it's got to go somewhere.
Right.
Does it mean that maybe the
solution is
right?
Not translation or anything?
Well,
I think it's some stimulations in this. And the behavior I saw was that the string segment would kind of come down and then drive along the horizon. You have two ends that go up in the D7 brain.
So you're talking about a meson, two ends on the D7 brain, and then you're starting to drag.
One on the heavy brain, one on the light brain.
Okay.
And then something in between that kind of drags.
That drag down.
Okay,
and so
I think we need to move on in order to allow some time for lunch.
Okay.
So let's thank the speaker, and I'm sure we'll be fine with it.